we're starting to see either new introductions of temperate fishes from the south, or at least larger numbers of them.
Fish migrating to Arctic waters. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, Labor Day, September 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new road connecting Tanana after years of local discussion and debate.
The community decided that help people lower their cost of living, that the road was an important part of that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
It's Labor Day, and in the U.S. House race, both Congressman Don Young and his Democratic challenger claim they're getting strong support from organized labor. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
The Democrat, Steve Lindbeck, is in Fairbanks to march in the Labor Day parade. He's buoyed by the recent decision of the Alaska AFL-CIO not to endorse anyone in the U.S. House race. As Lindbeck describes it, that's a major shift.
They, for the first time in many years, declined to make an endorsement. They've endorsed Young for a long time.
Lindbeck, a former general manager of Alaska Public Media, says he's been reaching out to unions. He's got the support of several, including the Alaska State Employees Association and the American Federation of Teachers. Lindbeck also won the endorsement of two maritime unions who are mad at Young for not intervening as a non-union company assumes the contract for piloting tankers from the Valdez terminal. The company, Edison Schwest, is a major source of campaign contributions for Young. Lindbeck, though, acknowledges he didn't get the AFL-CIO endorsement either.
Basically kind of fought him to a draw there, so we saw that as a big victory.
Young has traditionally enjoyed substantial union backing. That's due in part to his support of project labor agreements, which require union labor on certain government-funded projects. Young is back in Washington this week as Congress returns from its summer break. Young's campaign manager, Jerry Hood, downplayed the importance of the AFL-CIO decision not to issue an endorsement. Several unions that are under the AFL umbrella are endorsing Young, including the Alaska Teamsters, the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Local 367, and the Operating Engineers 302. Hood, who used to head the Alaska Teamsters, says labor's heart is unchanged.
The opponent can tout the labor support all he wants. The voting members of the unions are, I think, going to continue to go to the polls and support Don.
Nationally, union membership has been in steep decline for many years. In Alaska, though, nearly 22% of workers were represented by unions last year. That's equal to the rate in Hawaii and second only to New York. For APRN, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A new report shows more fish are moving to Arctic waters. The U.S. Geological Survey and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management teamed up to create the inventory, which describes more than 100 species of fish found in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, including 20 species new to the region. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has more.
The Alaska Arctic Marine Fish Ecology Catalog for the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas has been a long time coming. Biologist Milton Love has been working on the project since 2009. He says the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas appear to be changing.
We're starting to see either new introductions of temperate fishes from the south, or at least larger numbers of them. Particularly in the Beaufort Sea.
At this point, Love isn't sure what these changes mean for fish traditionally found in the Arctic. Since the area has historically been difficult to sample, it's hard to establish if fish are coming from the south or growing in population, or both. One species that could be affected is Arctic cod, a major player in the marine food web. Love says the species does better in near-freezing water.
If ice becomes less predominant over time and water's warm, then perhaps Arctic cod will not do as well. And there are a number of predatory birds and mammals that certainly feed in great quantity on Arctic cod.
If those species aren't able to eat anything else, they could be impacted too. Because of the importance of Arctic cod, the team analyzed the effects of a warming climate on the species, as well as its major competitor, saffron cod. As temperatures rise, both species will likely shift north. That would expand the range for saffron cod, but restrict the range for Arctic cod. Love sees a wide range of uses for the new report, from evaluating environmental impacts on the region to monitoring changes in fish distribution and managing fisheries. It also includes traditional Inupiaq names to improve communication between researchers and local communities. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
For more than 20 years, Skagway School was small enough that all students were taught in multi-age classrooms. But an increase in enrollment prompted the school to transition to single-grade elementary classrooms this year. KHNS's Emily Files checked in on how the major change is going.
So we have 13 cupcakes to bring to the party.
It's the second week of classes at Skagway School. Teacher Courtney Ellingson, also known as Miss Fun, has a math problem for her second graders. There are 13 cupcakes, and Kurt and Malcolm eat four of them. How many cupcakes are left?
So you kind of did some mental math there?
Take a few steps to the right, and on the other side of a removable wall, first graders are learning about math with their teacher, Denise Capozzi.
Did anyone get any different numbers? Did you get 5 and 3 also?
This is the first year since Ellingson and Capozzi started teaching at Skagway School that they've been in separate classrooms. Before, they co-taught kindergarten through second grade. Here's Capozzi.
So this is my 19th year teaching, and I have never taught a single grade. In all the years that I've been in Skagway School, I've always had multiple grade assignments.
For the first time in a generation, we have single grade classrooms.
Superintendent Josh Coffrin proposed this big change to the school board last year. Skagway had just passed a major threshold. Enrollment was over 100 students for the first time in about 7 years. The jump in numbers meant a $280,000 increase in state funding, allowing the school to hire 3 new teachers and make the transition to single-grade classrooms.
Enrollment is through the roof. Our high point of enrollment this year for K through 12 was 124 students. We haven't seen a number like that in 16 years.
That number will likely drop a bit after seasonal residents leave around the end of September. Coffrin estimates that when the state does its official student count in October, the school will have between 115 and 120 kids. Fifth grade teacher Mary Thull has taught at Skagway School for over 15 years. Until recently, she taught a combined fifth and sixth grade group.
So one lesson to one grade, another lesson. I was literally jogging across the room, and now I have one grade, one focus, so we can go richer and deeper and just take more time.
Superintendent Coffrin says that's the biggest benefit he's heard from teachers, being able to focus on one grade and spend more time with each student.
The only disadvantage that I can think of is that we've gotten so good at multi-age and multi-grade classrooms. Perhaps maybe you lose some of that.
Capozzi says that's the only hesitation she had about single grade classrooms.
I believe in multi-age groupings because of the fact that younger children work so well with the older students, and older students are then able to be leaders.
The removable wall that separates the first and second grade makes it easy to incorporate group activities like reading buddies.
So we're not completely letting go of our multi-age, but it's just that now we have single grade teachers, and that makes for more adult interaction.
Thole says she's noticed another impact on her 10-student classroom.
I feel a strength in the grade level identity and the team and the connectedness that my fifth graders have.
Thole says the enrollment trend bodes well for Skagway's year-round job prospects. The 1,000-person town's economy is heavily reliant on summer tourism, and many people leave once the last cruise ship sails away. But the fact that more students are coming into the school could mean that Skagway's economy is supporting more families staying year-round. Reporting in Skagway, I'm Emily Files.
The Fairbanks Police Department is investigating a shooting inside Bojangles nightclub that left one person dead and two others injured early Sunday. The department said in a statement that officers responding to reports of shots fired found two people with gunshot wounds at around 2:30 a.m. They were taken to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, where one victim was pronounced dead and another was listed in critical condition. A third victim was identified at the hospital as having sustained minor injuries from a gunshot wound. Police have not released any names. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Aleutic immersion program for preschool kids on Kodiak Island.
Our community has been working on language revitalization since the 1960s.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Beginning this fall, there will be three ways to share your thoughts or concerns with the University of Alaska Board of Regents. You can participate in a call-in session on Tuesday, September 6th from 4 to 6 p.m., attend an informal evening gathering in Juneau on Thursday, September 15th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., or provide written testimony prior to either event. Go to alaska.edu/bor/public-testimony. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Alaska has a new road connecting Tanana on the Yukon River. It is the first road to connect a community to the system built by the state in more than 20 years. The Department of Transportation held a ceremony last week to officially open the new road. It cost about $14 million, which is comparatively cheap next to most of Alaska's road projects. It promises to reduce freight and fuel costs to the village, but is also worrying locals about negative impacts. KYC's reporter Robin traveled the one-lane road with engineers who built it and has this report.
You can't drive very fast on the 16-foot-wide gravel and dirt strip. It's what engineers call a pioneer road, which is sort of a minimum standard to be called a road at all. There isn't much sight distance around corners, and there is no shoulder on which to pull off or turn around. Jonathan Hutchinson is a DOT engineer who designed the road.
It's a 50-mile segment of road from Manly Hot Springs all the way to the Yukon River. Within that 50 miles, you're basically in the middle of nowhere. There's no services, you know, no gas stations, there's no lodges to pull off and get amenities. And be prepared in the sense that you bring survival gear.
It now takes about 6 hours to drive from Fairbanks to Tanana. Well, almost to Tanana. The new road actually ends on the Yukon Riverbank about 6 miles upstream of the village. So people have to get from the end of the road to the village in boats, or in winter across the ice. Mike Ashton says he's carefully drilled and measured the Yukon River ice for the last 3 years and built an ice road to handle the weight.
For example, if I've got 4 feet, 5 inches of ice, I've got 50 inches of ice, I can carry about 119,000 pounds roughly. I double the safety margin. So if it says I can carry 20,000 pounds, I only put 10,000 pounds on there.
The riverbank is where DOT and village officials held a ribbon cutting. Kids were let out of school to attend, and they performed a new song about the road. On the riverbank where they dance, there are signs that say, Tozitna Land, and No Trespassing.
To me, this highway can go both ways. And personally, I am against it. Officially, my tribe wanted the road, so officially I'm for it too.
That's Curtis Summer of the Tanana Tribal Council. And his feelings of support and doubt are shared by many. Jeff Weltzine is the city manager for Tanana.
The city passed a resolution in support of the road, and the tribe did also after 2 years of community discussion. There was concern that the road may put extra harvest pressure on moose and other game. The community decided that help people lower their cost of living, that the road was an important part of that.
Department of Transportation designers came to the village several times to meet the community. The community picked the route. They arranged for the road to go through land that to non-natives is private property. For some miles, the road crosses Doyon Corporation land, and the last 12 miles goes through the land held by Tozitna, the native corporation for Tanana. Shannon Earhart is the executive director for the Tanana Tribal Council. She says prices for heating fuel, firewood, and gasoline may change, along with other freight.
I think it's going to have the biggest impact right away is on individual families that do haul their own stuff. Like right now, if you buy a bed, you're limited to a twin or a full-size bed that can be flown in, so you have to wait for a barge, or if you're really ingenious and want to use a snow machine. So this will make it a lot easier, because if the road comes out, it's only 6 to 10 minutes from Tanana.
Dorothy Shockley is president of Bean Ridge, the native corporation for Manly, now just 50 road miles away. She's happy she's now only 2 hours away from family in Tanana, but fears the road will invite hunters to trespass.
We're going to hire some security patrol, and they're going to patrol the road to help protect our lands and our resources.
The new road doesn't yet have a name. This connection from Manly to the riverbank is considered Phase 1. Phase 2, those 6 miles on the other side of the river, have an indefinite future, depending on state funding. I'm Robin, reporting in Tanana.
In August, about 30 tribal officials and community members discussed ways to get a new youth court up and running in Juneau. It's an opt-in program for youth tribal members in Southeast Alaska that's an alternative to the regular justice system. Sue Ann Lindhoff is in charge of the new program of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. She hopes they'll be able to start taking youth through the program in a few weeks, a student or two at a time.
And I don't want 5 students because I'm a strong believer in quality versus quantity.
The framework for the program has a strong emphasis on tribal mentorship and tradition. During the meeting, people suggested youth could work with elders to learn about traditional values and stories.
We don't want to reinvent the wheel. We don't want our personal identity to be first with this program. What we want to do is we want to put a spoke in the existing wheel already, if it means make it bigger, make it stronger.
Another meeting is planned for late September. The U.S. Department of Justice awarded the Central Council a $550,000 grant last year to create the Youth Recidivism Program.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Shunack tribe of Kodiak has just received a grant to begin an Aleutic language program for preschool-age children. Candace Branson is the tribe's Aleutic heritage educator and says Shunack won a 5-year, almost $2 million grant from the Administration for Native Americans. Branson explains it'll enable a whole new generation to be immersed in Aleutic language with a teacher and a teacher's aide dedicated to that mission.
Our community has been working on language revitalization since the 1960s, and this grant is a huge honor and a huge responsibility for the Shunack tribe, and I really look forward to doing our best and moving forward with the language revitalization movement.
Branson says connecting with her ancestral language has helped her form an identity within the Native community, and there are other benefits to learning the Aleutic language.
In terms of broader scales outside of my experience, we know that learning your indigenous language helps with the effects of historical trauma. So it can be something that relates you to a positive aspect of your culture.
Branson says the language nest will serve the same age group as a preschool, and the teacher and teacher's aide will instruct 2 days a week, 4 hours a day. Branson says classes should be ready to begin in January. There are only a few hundred Tlingit speakers in the world, according to linguists and researchers. In a world dominated by English, Tlingit is an endangered language. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute hopes to combat that. The organization announced the release of 2 free apps aimed at making learning the language more accessible. KTOO's Lakedra Chavis has the story.
How do you pronounce the name of one of the major Alaska Native tribes in Southeast and the language its people speak?
It's how I've always learned growing up. Grandma, mom, uncles, they always said it like that. Tlingit.
The name is Tlingit. Just the way I hear my colleagues say the name.
That's Tlingit. I just sounded it out by the way it's spelled.
That is Tlingit.
Tlingit. I've never seen a T and an L together before, so I'm going to say the T is silent.
That was Eric Seeley, Steve Hendrickson, Marty Lewis, Norman Vonda, and Laureen Meyer. Only Vonda pronounced the name correctly.
That is Tlingit.
So then Tlingit. Tlingit is a tonal language, and so your tone will go, it's a high tone at the end, so your voice will go up at the end. Tlingit.
That's Katrina Hodge. She's behind 2 recently released apps to help people learn Tlingit. Earlier this week, I sat down with Hodge and Kathy Dye. Dye walked me through the Tlingit Games app, which has 2 naming games in it.
This is the birds game. So the viewer is in the app looking at birds sitting in a tree.
The game features a colorful array of about a dozen birds common throughout Southeast. There's even a hummingbird that flies in and out of your screen. Dai designed the birds herself. Each one took about a day. The goal is to match what someone might see in our actual world with their Tlingit names.
You touch a bird to see the word and hear it. Hawk. Robin. Eagle. Small owl.
Katrina Hodge has been working on the language app since the year began, editing and gathering audio, some that's decades old, from the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's archives.
There's also years and years of work of collecting the audio that a lot of current and past Sea Alaska Heritage employees have done. And that's been going on for many years.
Yeah. There's so many people that have done a lot of work in the language, and it's exciting to make it more accessible to everyone.
The other app, Learning Tlingit, has about 300 entries and 3 main categories. Alphabet.
Coffee.
Kahwe.
Vocabulary.
It is sunny.
Ondigon.
And phrases.
One of the more difficult but super useful phrases for a beginning learner is,
I don't know.
Hodge says she's not a fluent speaker, so she tried to pick entries that would be helpful for someone who's learning.
What's probably going to be some really popular categories in the phrases is introductions and learning Tlingit and probably mealtime. Everybody eats, yeah.
She says the goal was to create a game that exemplifies the organization's mission.
Especially Hashuka, that's the concept of you're connected to the past, present, and future. And so, you know, we have audio of all of these speakers, and some of them have gone on, you know, but we're making it available for present and future generations to help perpetuate the language and culture.
The Institute hopes apps like this will give people the tools they need to learn and maintain the language. At KTOO, we usually pronounce it Tlingit, but in a story that's all about pronunciation, I gave the real way a try.
And then add on the voiceless L. Maybe just practice that one by itself, the sh. Yeah. Tlingit.
Tlingit. I still need to practice.
At least now, there's an app for that. And Juno, I'm Lakedra Chavis.
Enrolled members of Alaska's largest tribal government are getting enhanced photo IDs. They can be used for border crossings and some other situations where official identification is necessary. But as Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports, many other tribes can't afford them.
The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska counts more than 30,000 members in and outside the state. It's issued photo ID cards for more than a dozen years, but President Richard Peterson says the enhanced ones are more secure.
These new IDs can't really be replicated, so they have like a hologram, kind of like the state ID has done. Like TSA prefers having the enhanced cards.
The IDs have been required for several years by the Department of Homeland Security's Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative.
Unfortunately, not a lot of tribes have been able to do it because it's quite costly.
Jacqueline Peta is executive director of the National Congress of American Indians, the largest such organization in the country. She's also a Central Council vice president.
It's kind of like one of those unfunded mandates from the government. So unless they're able to get other resources, some tribes have been able to get some grant money, but most tribes have had to fund it themselves.
PETA says enhanced IDs are particularly necessary for tribal governments near Mexico and Canada.
So many tribes are border tribes, and, you know, our culture doesn't stop because the border lines were drawn.
The Central Council says the new IDs' security enhancements will help protect personal data and reduce the risk of counterfeiting. Council members can apply for the new cards through the organization's website. Peterson says they can mail in a photo or catch up with council officials as they travel the region.
We try to get to our largest population bases for sure and get those done, and then we do community visits.
The new Central Council ID cards are good for 5 years, after which they must be replaced. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Files in Haines, Robin in Fairbanks, Lakedra Chavis and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message brought to you by Alaska PTAC.
Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.